Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is about 9:44 a.m. on Friday, May 6, 2022. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Talia Ames from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and others in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Vance, Representative Price Tompkins on the phone, Representative Drummond, Representative Kirka on the phone, Representative Snyder, my vice chair on the phone, and myself, Representative Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 5, Sexual Assault Definition of Consent, sponsored by Representative Tarr. Representative Tarr is with us today. This is the eighth meeting of the bill, hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. At this time, we will take up amendments to House Bill 5. I'd like to put on the record that legislative legal has permission to take up to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. Our office received three amendments to House Bill 5. As a reminder, amendment process will be treated like floor amendments. The maker of the amendment moves the amendment, speaks to it with a three-minute limit, then we'll take questions, and questions will be limited to 1 minute per question, and we'll proceed to discussion with each member limited to 3 minutes, and finally, the maker of the amendment will have 1 minute to wrap up. When we come to an amendment, the mover can either move the amendment or it will be withdrawn. We will not roll amendments to the back, and we're going to begin with amendment number one. And as I'm the sponsor of all three amendments, I'll move them and have my staff explain. So I will move amendment number one.
Object, Mr. Chair, for purposes of discussion.
And I'd ask my staff, Emma Potter, to come forward and tell us about amendment number one.
For the record, Emma Potter, staff to Representative Klayman. Amendment number one changes the reference in the bill to consent. It essentially cleans up the bill. So AS 1141-410 through AS 1141-427 references the sexual assault crimes. And so this amendment removes the sexual abuse of a minor crimes, because those cases, consent is not at issue.
Is the objection maintained?
I remove my objection.
Is there any further objection to amendment number one? And Rep. Tardy, do you want to make any comments on amendment number one? All right. Without objection, amendment number one is approved. I'll move amendment number two.
Object for purposes of discussion, Mr. Chair.
And Ms. Potter, tell us about amendment number two.
And just to clarify, amendment number two is R.3.
Yes.
So R.3 amends the consent definition in version R to the previous definition found in version W. This is a freely given definition of consent. This change is based on the invited testimony that we heard that a definition of consent that uses the phrase freely given is more protective of victims in prosecution of these cases.
And Rep. Tarr, any comments you want to add on amendment number two? Representative Drummond, is the objection maintained? Representative Eastman, question.
Thank you. I'm looking at the second half of the consent definition, particularly the portion that says in this paragraph, freely given means agreement to cooperate in the act was positively expressed by word or action. And I remember testimony in, I think, more than one hearing where it was discussed at some length that someone passively responding to someone else's overtures is at best ambiguous, because in some situations passivity will mean a rejection of someone else's advances, and in other situations it means that there is no objection. And just like in we have our process, when nobody objects, we assume that that means consent. And yet we are basically defining that lack of action, lack of affirmative, positively expressed action, as the absence of consent, which will criminalize conduct, which right now society doesn't, many in society don't believe is wrong or evil or bad or should be criminalized. And now this is criminalizing such that conduct now becomes part of rape, sexual assault in our legal vernacular. And I can see how a society that held that standard and believed that would help some victims. But I can also see that moving society in that direction through the force of law, in fact, legal coercion, will also create new victims, because you will have individuals who are not trying to do anything wrong, but are now running afoul of the law. And that might, I suppose, some might say that that's exciting, and maybe there's, you know, something attractive about that. But at the end of the day, we are putting individuals at legal liability that I don't think should be at legal liability, because when passivity is not objection, when it is consent, we are ruling that out by definition. I think that's probably a bad choice in the long term.
That sounds more like a comment than a question, which is fine. Representative Tarr, looks like you'd like to respond to Representative Eastman's comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things. In terms of the freely given part of that, it's important that we worked with the Department of Law on that part of the definition I was just sharing with Representative Vance. And it's important that that part about words or actions be included in the definition, because as you heard the law professor speak about the other day, there are some people who would like to take consent to, take it, I would say, a step farther, if you will, to just mean expressed through words. And so there would actually have to be, you know, that dialogue about each engagement of sexual activity. It's important that we define it in this way to include both words or action, because, again, in terms of what is healthy, typical sexual behavior by two consenting partners, includes both words or actions, and there's no effort or intention here, you know, to criminalize any of that kind of behavior. The other thing I think is important is we always have to be sort of remembering how the law is going to be applied, and that there would have to be, you know, a report of a sexual assault, an investigation, you know, enough elements that it seemed there was actually a crime committed, then considered for prosecution, you know, which would consider, could I prove that this was a sexual assault beyond a reasonable doubt, you know. And so I think, you know, in a scenario where, you know, it wasn't actually a crime, or, you know, somehow it's unlikely that a scenario like that rises to, you know, an actual criminal prosecution. I think, you know, in the many, many conversations now we've had over the years about different criminal law or prosecutions, you know, there's all these sort of different steps where certainly people can be educated about the law. There's prosecutorial discretion about, you know, moving a case forward. You know, that's another opportunity. So, you know, sort of filtering out any misunderstandings, I think there are, you know, places that can be applied. And what our goal is to provide enough clarity that when there is a, you know, a sexual assault crime, a rape, that the law can be effectively applied.
Representative Eastman, go ahead. I have a follow-up question, but Representative Eastman, you can go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, and I'll hold off on my question until after you ask yours. I don't want to change the topic of the conversation there. Go ahead.
So one of the pieces of testimony that we heard was the whole issue of the frozen fear response. How does keeping the second phrase of the definition, the phrase that defines freely given, How does that assist in the world of the frozen fear response, which has been documented to be a real issue in sexual assault?
Mr. Chairman, in the elements, and I'm sorry because I don't have my version right in front of me, but thankfully your staff does. We're sharing documents here.
It's the amendment, Representative Tarr.
But if you... if you're looking in the elements of consent, and this would be section 4,
okay.
You have an expression of lack of consent through words or conduct means there's no consent. Absence of verbal or physical resistance does not establish consent.
Number two, consent may be expressed or inferred from a person's behavior. Both a person's action and inaction in the context of the circumstances may be considered. So I think that is where we fully cover the freeze element.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Eastman.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'd like to start with a comment and then end with a question.
Why don't you get the question first? We like to do questions, as you know.
All right. Well, let's start there then. I'll better form my previous comment in the form of a question. So a moment ago, we as legislators took official action to add an amendment to this bill. And we took official action, most of us, yeah, including everyone on the phone, by not positively expressing word or action in the affirmative. And so our inaction, our passive response was interpreted, I think, by everyone in the building as consent. And so the amendment is passed to the bill. And we are moving one part of how we work in society, namely these types of interactions, based on a different definition of consent. And my question is, should we be uniform? Should we, in making this type of movement, if it's helpful for society, should we not be consistent and reform the way we conduct business as a legislature as well, in line with this new definition of consent?
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Representative Eastman, you know, that's far beyond the scope of this legislation, and I'm just very hopeful that we're getting this legislation moved out of this committee today. So that's really my focus. I think, again, the thing that can give you some comfort about that is, okay, you're talking about potentially two individuals. One of them is who's unfamiliar with the legal definition. But again, you know, if they're consenting adults, I can't see a circumstance where the individual, one of those individuals, is then going to, you know, reach out to law enforcement to, report a crime. You sort of have to establish that one person thinks a crime has been committed here. So if somebody thinks there's a crime, then they would be knowledgeable about the elements of consent, because you wouldn't otherwise know that you weren't meeting the elements of consent if you didn't know what the elements were. So I'm just having trouble sort of, and perhaps it's just me missing, and, you know, maybe I don't know if Department of Law is available online, if they could think of a circumstance, but...
As the representative, as the sponsor of the amendment, I'll respond to Representative Eastman's question. And, I mean, the question you're asking, framed in an interesting way, is that we just routinely, if no one objects, the amendment passes. If no one objects, the bill passes out of committee. And by our non-expression of anything, we are, in that theory, consenting. But we are faced in this state with the highest level of sexual assault rates in the country. It's beyond embarrassing. And the notion that we should treat consent to sexual conduct in the same way that we sit in this room, and I believe that everyone that sits in this room that doesn't object, I believe every one of us knows exactly what we're doing when we do not object and the amendment passes. We have to do something more about sexual assault in this state. And I believe a definition like this that says that you need a little bit more than just, sounds like the bill's going to pass. That's what we need. I don't know exactly how this is going to work out in prosecution, but we have to have a little more. And I think what this amendment does, and I think the willingness language that would be the alternative if we did not adopt this amendment, I think that willingness language also does a little bit more, because I think we have to do more. And that needs to be in the statute. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Much like Representative, if you don't mind, I don't have a question, but okay. Reflection off of...
Okay, let's do this. If there's questions for Representative Tarr, let's finish the questions, and then we can take comments on this. I know that this is one of the big issues that we have. So if you have questions for Representative Tarr, let's get the questions out, and then we'll go. If no one has questions, then we'll turn right to you for comments. And I don't see questions, so comments. Representative Eastman, you have another question? Okay, I'll give you a chance to get your comments together.
Trying to formulate a question, right? Reframe, but
all right, go
the question that Representative Eastman is asking is something that I've been thinking about as well, and is, you know, we have this phrase of silence is consent. And now, being in the legislature, we think about it in the ways that Representative Eastman described. That just affirms that cultural definition of silence as consent. Whether we chose to have it as that or not, it came about in some form. But when we're thinking about the specific issue of sexual assault, I think of the story that John Skidmore gave us about a rape that happened within marriage, and the wife was asleep, and her husband essentially videotaped assaulting her, and she was unconscious. And once she woke up and realized what had happened, obviously she was quite offended and went to the police, and they could do nothing. She was silent in that. And otherwise, in their marriage, she would have been most likely a willing participant. However, did her silence in that mean consent? Obviously, she expressed no, it absolutely did not, especially when it contained other elements of being videotaped and that being shared. So we have to, I think it's wise of us to look at what our society is considering consent and how big of a shift we're going to make that. How are we going to communicate this to Alaskans that silence is no longer consent, and we need to be shifting other areas, not just within the case of sexual assault or any sexual interactions. And I think that's a very big challenge to us. And which comes first, society or the law?
So are you asking the question to Representative Tard? Do you feel like the second second phrase of the definition goes too far, and we're ahead of society by defining it as affirmative consent? Is that the question?
Yes, thank
you're
asking?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Vance, I think because this is how consent is being taught now. You know, there's an acronym FRIES that's frequently used, particularly with young people. And, you know, that's where a lot of this education happens, of course, because as adults, we don't regularly attend classes on topics like this. And so the FRIES acronym is freely given, reversible, informed, enthusiastic, specific. And, you know, the enthusiastic element, of course, is not really something you would write in statute because, of course, enthusiastic, right? What would that mean? But when you say positively expressed through word or action, you really capture that concept. And again, I think, you know, we do want to move to the place where, you know, it is more than just I didn't say no, because we know in the I didn't say no is that freeze element. And so, you know, the trauma response of fight, flight, or freeze, we want to make sure the freeze element does get captured. And so, you know, I think the way it's captured, though, sort of positively expressed by word or action, really does get at all kind of elements of behavior, so that, you know, people in the way that we typically interact with each other, maybe some people aren't quite as verbal because that may not be quite as comfortable, but you, through your body language and the way you, you know, move your own arms or legs, you know, can, and sort of, you know, make it be known that you want to be there, and that's, you know, a comfortable place for you. So we don't want anything to disrupt that. And, you know, like I say, I don't know if Department of Law is on, but when we talk through this concept, the reason they wanted freely given to be defined is to provide that level of clarity, that would be more encompassing for both words and action, you know, thinking that gives you like all of the elements of behavior that, you know, include two people that want to be doing it.
So Department of Law is not online, but we can ask them. We can, I know we saw Ms. Schroeder yesterday. We can contact and see if they can come in, if you'd like them to come in.
This is Representative Kirker. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, Representative Kirker.
Thank you. I guess this is for Representative Tarr, actually. I'm just thinking through this quandary here of this issue of some situations where silence, you know, for some people means consent and, you know, others it doesn't. And I'm thinking of, I guess, the issue that Representative Eastman raised in your response to it, that you don't think it's likely, or, and I agree with you, likely scenario where somebody was giving consent, but then they would later on go to the police and say, well, this wasn't consent. I guess the concern is that, say you have that scenario, and say later on in time the relationship went sour, and potentially somebody out of spite or vindictively wanted to, you know, punish somebody else, they would then, you know, manufacture a claim of rape when in fact the time there was consent. And I guess that's the problem with all a lot of these cases. It's just, it's a he said, she said situation if there's not other evidence involved. But how do we resolve that situation?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Kirka, you kind of answered the question by saying it at the end where it's the he said, she said. In the many conversations I've had with the Department of Law, with advocates, with Office of Victims' Rights, with other attorneys whose primary focus is prosecution of sexual assault crimes, you know, what has kind of been described to me, and I think the chairman brought it up in the last hearing with the law professor, is, you know, there's sort of this gray area in the human behavior. So in the statute, you're trying to, you know, define it in a way that captures enough of the behavior that you want included, but not be so descriptive that you inadvertently exclude some behaviors. And I think that's that, you know, you sort of describe one of those kind of challenges there. And so I think, you know, what's been, you know, suggested to me in terms of evaluating it is to come back to then, you know, what would the process be for a criminal procedure? You know, it would be someone would have to, you know, call law enforcement, report a crime, there'd be an investigation, you know, so there'd have to, you know, they, you know, there'd have to be evidence, you know, they get this evidence, they, you know, send it to for consideration for prosecution. You know, their evaluation is that, can I prove beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, that this crime, you know, whichever crime they may be considering that they would want to prosecute under, you know, can I prove beyond a reasonable doubt that that happened? And, you know, that's both protective and, you know, I think that's a good thing, you know, for the rights of all people, right? There's these layers of protection because we don't want, you know, frivolous crimes against people, you know, because the impact can be so long lasting and, you know, on a personal level, you want the justice system to, you know, provide justice for the cases where the law was broken. So I don't think there's a exact answer, Representative Kirker, that I can give you today, but I think in, you know, if I hadn't been working on this for 4 years and had, you know, probably 50 conversations on this very topic that always come back to, you know, kind of, there's those layers of protection that that mean that the law shouldn't be allowed to be misapplied. Then that's how when you can't kind of just actually pinpoint, you know, it with exact precision every particular behavior or consideration, then it's sort of like that reasonable standard of, okay, you know, would there be evidence and would it, and you kind of can't get there, you know, in a circumstance where there really wasn't a crime.
So I just saw Casey Schroeder poking her head in. And
my lifeline.
You nabbed her again.
So, Ms. Schroeder, the question that I assume you've seen the amendments we're considering amendment number 2. There have been some questions about the second phrase of the consent definition relating to freely given, the definition of freely given in lines 4 and 5 of amendment number 2. And I'll actually phrase the question slightly differently, because I think what, from my conversations with Representative Vance before the meeting, the question was raised about what would happen if we were to delete that phrase, starting with freely given means an agreement to cooperate in the act that was positively expressed by word or action. what's the importance of having that definition in the law, and B, if that were phrase were to be removed, what impact would that have?
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. The importance of having freely given defined is to provide further guidance and clarity to the prosecutor. And we do want to include word or action, because I think, as I heard Representative Tarr say, that is how people engage in normal, healthy relationships. It's not always a yes. There is usually action involved as well. So we want to be able to consider that. The other thing is that I would consider the definition in the context of the other descriptors that are in the bill.
Which is Section 4?
Yes, Section 4. The descriptors add further context to how this definition would be applied. And then in particular, I would refer the committee to page 4, line 10, that talks about in the context of the circumstances. That is another way of saying the totality of the circumstances. We're going to be looking at what the environment was in which that conduct occurred. I did hear a question about, well, you know, something passed in this committee, and people acquiesced, basically, and so that was inferred to be consent. But that is in the context of the circumstances. So in the context of what happened here in committee, that's why it was inferred that way. And so that's similar to the analysis that we would conduct when we are looking at whether or not inaction would be consent or not. And then the other thing I would point out, I'm sorry I ran over here, is that
we appreciate the sprint.
It's probably the only one I've gotten in the last month. But I would also point out that we have to prove that the defendant was reckless. The defendant has to be reckless as to the lack of consent. And if I could just read for the committee the definition of reckless. A person acts recklessly with respect to a result or circumstance described by a provision of law defining the offense when the person is aware of and consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that a result will occur or that the circumstances exist. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that disregard of it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of conduct that a reasonable person would observe in the situation. So again, that's the element we would have to prove. We would have to prove that mental state, and we would have to prove that the defendant was reckless. And that's why we would look at the totality of the circumstances to determine whether or not inaction and the defendant's disregard of that and proceeding on with the conduct was reckless.
I think Representative Kirka, any follow-up on that? I think that's where we were answering Representative Kirka's question. Any follow-up, Representative Kirka?
Not at this time. I got kissed in the background. It is, I guess, a quandary, and I'm struggling with, but I think that reckless helps a little bit.
Representative Vance, further question? Representative Eastman?
Yes, a different line of thought.
Next question.
So I would like to propose two conceptual amendments. I'd like to start with the first. I'd like to propose conceptual amendment number one, which would remove six words from the amendment. And the six words would be on lines 3 and 4, specific to the conduct at issue.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. So there's been talk of...
This is conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two.
Yes.
Okay.
There's been talk of the importance of tailoring the consent to a specific activity about to take place, or conduct is the word that we're using here. And I think that, you know, there's a good point to be made for why that's important. But it also occurs to me that we are doing too much in this amendment, because we are, through these six words, effectively introducing chronology into the definition of consent. And so I think the argument is stronger for either dealing with the chronological issue or dealing with the positively expressed by action issue. I think by doing both, I think we're going to find there's unintended consequences. So the conduct at issue is specific to a specific time. And in specifically talking about the conduct at issue, what we are effectively saying, maybe we can have more discussion on this, but what we're effectively saying is if you consented at another time, then that's not consent, because there needs to be consent now. So if you consented last night to this activity, or last week, or an hour ago, that is we're drawing a distinction there. We're saying that is not the same thing as consenting now to the conduct at issue now. And I think the word now is kind of implied there. And so what we're saying is that if action previously was sort of consensual action, but there's no action now about conduct at issue now, then it's not consent. And I think in doing so, we are we're capturing maybe all of the circumstances in which someone doesn't freely give consent, but we're also capturing issues and circumstances and situations and scenarios where someone is giving consent, but it's not specific enough. It's not specific to the conduct at issue, and so we are effectively criminalizing activity that is consensual.
All right. And Ms. I'll first turn. It looks like Ms. Schroeder has a comment on that. I'll give her the first, if that's all right with you, Representative Tarr.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I think with this definition, we are saying exactly what you're describing. We're saying that the conduct has to be consented to at the time, and it has to be the type of conduct that the person wants to engage in. So we're saying both. And that is generally how I think a lot of people think of consent. What I will say about your example where, well, you know, so-and-so consented to this type of behavior yesterday, so the defendant thought it was okay this time, and well, you know, now he might be in trouble. I would say that would go to his reckless mental state. I think that it would be common for defendants to defend on saying, this person is my partner, this is the type of conduct we engage in all the time, we've done it, you know, X, Y, and Z many times, and I thought when I did it this time that it was okay. And that goes to the reckless mental state. So I think leaving the definition as is and saying that the person has to have consent at the time and for the conduct is appropriate.
Any other comments on conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two, Representative Brown?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all of this discussion is just about the first five lines of amendment number two, right? We have not consider any of the rest of this. Okay, thank you.
I would say that's appropriate.
Thank you.
This is the meat of the discussion.
That's right. After our lecture from Professor Furzan the other day, it was made pretty clear to me that she said, take this section from the State Affairs version, CSSHB 5 State Affairs, page 6, lines 2 through 4, and the conduct at issue, specific to the conduct at issue, was part of that. And she thought that version, we should return to that version, and that's what your amendment is doing. And therefore, I do not agree that those six words need to be deleted. This was an acceptable amendment, and I know I felt much more comfortable knowing that we were going to return to this language, and I believe it needs to retain the specific to the conduct at issue language. So I'm going to maintain my objection.
Any other comments? I'll give you a wind up. Any other comments on conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two? I don't see any of the others from members of the committee.
Representative Kirk, can you restate the conceptual amendment again?
Conceptual amendment would remove on line 3 and 4, would remove the word specific to the conduct at issue. So that consent definition would say consent means a freely given reversible agreement. In this paragraph, freely given means agreement to cooperate in the act was positively expressed by word or action. So the phrase specific to the conduct at issue is removed. Any comments, Representative Kirka?
No.
The only comment that I would make is from some of the discussions that we had, by not having specific to the conduct at issue, it invites potential arguments about, well, I consented last night and I learned something a week later, and if I'd known that then, I wouldn't have consented then. And the keeping the phrase specific to the conduct at issue, which I think consistent with Representative Eastman's observation that it means conduct at issue now, I think if you don't have that phrase, I think it opens a lot of additional problems. So Representative Eastman, I'll give you wind up, and then if you want to proceed with the amendment, we'll take a vote on conceptual amendment number one.
And I appreciate and agree with the comments from the chair just now, dealing with what, you know, the problems would be if we were to remove the six words. And I think Ms. Schroeder spoke well of the conduct that I think all of us are trying to prescribe and criminalize here. And this amendment certainly does that. If it was just the six words alone, I think I would be in support and agreement with other members on this. But we are modifying those six words with the last portion of that sentence, now that we're adding the positively expressed by action. And I'm not talking about words, because I think there's agreement there. But since we're positively expressing by action and the conduct is at issue now, we're talking about action effectively now. And I think, yes, we protect all the current victims, but as legislators, we have a duty more than just to protect the current victims. We have a duty to do what we can to prevent future victims. And by casting such a wide net, I believe that it's inescapable that we will now be adding to the list of victims, because there's going to be individuals like Representative Kirka spoke to, who now get caught up in this legal definition. And, there's an understanding of maybe what was intended at the time.
You're at the minute mark on your comments.
Sure. Let's one minute, please. So my wrap-up is this. We seem to be focusing unnecessarily on just prosecutions and convictions when there's going to be all other sorts of aspects of this that are implicated.
Thank you very much. Do you want to proceed with the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Secretary, if you would please call the roll as to conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two.
Representative Kirka?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
No.
Representative Drummond?
No.
Representative Snyder?
No.
Representative Price Tompkins?
No.
Representative Eastman?
Yes.
Chair Klayman?
No.
Two yea, five nay.
So by a vote of 2-5, conceptual amendment number one has failed. Representative Eastman, do you want to move conceptual amendment number two?
Yeah, so conceptual amendment two, which probably surprised no one, it would end the sentence at the semicolon, replace the semicolon with a period, and then delete the following words after that.
So the definition of freely given would be removed.
Yes, the references to in this paragraph, freely given, is removed from this amendment.
Okay, is there objection?
Object.
So there's an objection. Do you need a lot of explanation? Do you think
I don't think so. But I'd like to say this. We are focusing most all of our attention, it seems, through this amendment on the current victims that we can all understand and are tangible, and of course we all want to protect. I am, in this conceptual amendment, focusing or expanding the focus to those who are not yet victims, and hoping that we don't create new victims. And where we'd have a longer conversation, we might talk about things like, well, how many cases result in prosecution and conviction, you know, in a court of law, absent a plea agreement? And of course, the answer would be, well, very few. Because all along the way, you have cases that fall off. Either they're charged and not prosecuted, or they're received and not charged, or there's a plea agreement, or there's, you know, simply in, someone dropping the case for another reason. And so the victims that I want us to be thinking about now, which aren't victims yet, but may well be by passage of this amendment, are those who right now they understand that in the context of a relationship, that the absence of an expressed positive action in that relationship in those circumstances doesn't mean a failure of consent. We talked about Fries earlier. And yet, I think we would all agree there's examples, maybe in our own lives, where Fries did not describe the activity, but there was no lack of consent. It is very rare, I think, for two individuals to have exactly the same level of enthusiasm relating to an activity, but that doesn't mean there is no consent. And so the individuals that will become victims by this are those who understand that and engage in the behavior. And then afterward, there is incentives that our system creates for them to say, you know what, there was no positively expressed action. And therefore, you know, if you don't X fill in the blank, then I am going to report this criminal activity. And on the letter of the law, both members of that activity would agree that there was no positively expressed action. And by the law, we are saying that consent was not given. We are not allowing for the fact that there are so many circumstances when that consent will not have been positively expressed by an action or a word. And whether we're talking about child custody cases, or whether we're talking about some other...
Representative, you're at the three-minute mark for your open remarks.
Sure, I'll wrap up.
Why don't you wrap up real quick?
So whatever it is that is creating an incentive to point out the letter of the law as opposed to the spirit...
Thank you very much. I think you've made your pitch. Any further discussion of Amendment Number 2, Conceptual Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 2? Hearing and seeing none, Representative Eastman, I'll give you a 30-second wrap-up.
I said what needed to be said. Thank you.
Okay. I assume the objection is maintained?
Objection is maintained.
Please call the roll as to Conceptual Amendment Number 2 to Amendment Number 2.
Representative Eastman?
Yes.
Representative Kirka?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
No.
Representative Drummond?
No.
Representative Snyder?
No.
Representative Price Tompkins?
No.
Chair Clayman?
No.
2 yea, 5 nay.
So by a vote of 2-5, Conceptual Amendment Number 2 has failed. That brings the Amendment Number 2 back before us. And I will give everyone a chance for final comments, as is our practice. We'll rotate through and I'll see where we're starting with.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Drummond,
if I could, we haven't really addressed anything beyond the first five lines of this amendment. If you could just give us a rough outline of what the rest of it does, because there's some important stuff in here.
Ms. Potter, if you could come tell us about the rest of Amendment Number 2.
For the record, Emma Potter, staff to Representative Clayman. What you see past the initial five lines of the amendment is the necessary conforming changes to put this definition into the bill. So previously, version R has the definition of willingness for consent, and part of that change in the bill also changed or amended the military code of justice statute And so that is why we are deleting what you see on lines 12 and 13 of the amendment. That's making it conform to the new definition. And the Military Code of Justice does use a freely given definition of consent. And so that's why it's not necessary to have this any longer.
I don't see any questions, so we'll go to final comments on the amendment. And we'll start. Representative Kirka, any comments as to amendment number 2 that's before us? He's got many children keeping his attention divided. I'll assume no comments from Representative Kirka. Representative,
no comment this time.
Okay, thank you, Representative Kirka. I know you've got your hands full, so I. Representative Christ Tompkins, any comments on amendment number 2?
No comments.
Representative Snyder?
No, thank you.
Representative Drummond?
I think I've said everything that needs to be said. Thank you.
Representative Vance?
I just want to appreciate, thank, you know, everyone involved in trying to get to the exact wording. It's definitely been a process, and we're trying to find the perfect phrase, the perfect definition. And as Rep. Tarr said, there's a lot of gray area when it comes to human conduct. And you know, Representative Eastman's concerns, I think, is something that all of us contemplate. But in that conversation, the picture that came to mind were the scales of justice. And we have to find that balance. And right now, our scales of justice when it comes to sexual assault in Alaska and how many are brought to justice, the scales are tipped very, very unequally. And I'm hoping that this definition will bring that scale into a better balance. It may not be perfect, but that's why we get to look at this again in the future. But I'm hoping in the meantime that that scale will provide better balance and help our prosecutors be able to clearly articulate the action and bring justice to both parties involved in these cases.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. I'll be strongly opposing the amendment, not because it doesn't have some good in it, but because it introduces a effectively a coercive element into these relationships, of which there are many relationships in society. And it introduces it in this way. You know, the morning after, when two people are reflecting back on what happened the day or the night before, and one says to the other, you know, you didn't positively express, or I didn't positively express consent through word or action. The other person says, no, you didn't, and they chuckle about that, and that's not an issue at that moment. But I'll tell you when that can become an issue. When that can become an issue is when one of those individuals, particularly the one who did not positively express word or consent, is sitting down with an attorney, and they're in divorce proceedings or child custody proceedings or some other legal matter involving the two parties. And any good attorney is going to start off, or maybe start off, but follow up with a question. So, you know, when you had this relationship, was there ever a time when penetration or other activity that we're talking about here, and you did not positively express consent by word or action? And then the person's going to think to themselves, well, there was a time, or maybe there were multiple times. And then that is going to become leverage that is considered to be used and likely will be used in some circumstances against the individual who initiated or the other party in that relationship. And that will be a tool of discord, and it will be a tool of coercion. And I think we're here because we're thinking that the problems that we have with rape can be fixed by redefining a word. And I don't think that was the cause of the problem to begin with, and I don't think the solution will fix that.
Thank you. And I'll just respond to amendment number two. I would just note there's been some discussion on the committee about the prosecution and defense perspectives. And one of the issues that's been raised throughout these discussions has been, does the change to an affirmative consent model, does that actually create more focus on the victim and less focus on the defendant? I actually think that it does. And I think one of the challenges about making the change is it going to give the defense some tools they didn't have today? And I think that it does. And so the suggestion that we've had saying this is going to make it put people at more risk of prosecution, I think it's going to still make the same questions continue. Was there consent? Was there consent under the circumstances? I think this is a very positive step. I think it's positive whether it was willingness that's in the bill or the amendment to consent, which I also support. But I think the suggestion that this doesn't still make them very complicated trials is, I don't think that's true. I think these trials will continue to be challenging trials, and I think that this definition change is actually going to help for folks that actually are victims of crime feeling like they have a basis upon which they can come forward with their claims. So,
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to make a comment.
That you had your chance and you didn't have comments. We're going to take a vote on amendment number two.
Representative Price Tompkins?
Yes.
Representative Eastman?
No.
Representative Kirka?
No.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Snyder?
Yeah.
Chair Klayman?
Yes.
5 yea, 2 nay.
So by a vote of 5-2, we have adopted amendment number 2. That brings us next to amendment number 3, and I'll move amendment number 3.
Object for purposes of discussion.
Ms. Potter, tell us about amendment number 3. And I just note for the committee, just because we've got another bill up, and I know we've got some time limits, we're going to do our best to get through this amendment in the next 10 or 12 minutes.
For the record, Emma Potter, staff to Representative Klayman. Amendment number 3 deletes subparagraph 5 from the section where consent is at issue. This subparagraph says consent is ineffective if induced by forced arrest or deception. We heard from the invited testimony that this had a broader impact than was desired, specifically in the context of deception. And so this amendment removes that from the bill.
Questions about amendment number 3? Hearing and seeing none, is the objection maintained?
No. I remove my objection.
Is there any further objection to amendment number 3? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 3 is approved. That brings the bill back before us. And closing comments from the committee. And as usual, I'll give each member one opportunity for final comments and 3 minutes per member. Representative Christ Tompkins, any comments about amendment number 3? Or not amendment number 3, House Bill 5.
No comments. I feel much more comfortable with the legislation as amended.
Representative Snyder.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to express my gratitude both to committee leadership and the sponsor of the bill for moving this forward, and I'm glad for the evolution of this bill, and I'm happy for the opportunity to move it forward today. Thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I feel much more comfortable with this legislation, particularly as the originator of the legislation is more comfortable with it as it stands. So I'm good to go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vance.
I'll let my previous statement stand.
Appreciate that. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. You know, I rarely object to passing a bill out of committee. I'll be objecting today because there is one area, I think a crucial area, where we have not resolved the conflict. And that is at a very fundamental level, where I believe we're equivocating in the bill, because on the one hand, we're focusing a lot of our discussion on prosecutions and saying that, well, this bill won't, you know, result in certain kinds of prosecutions or certain kinds of convictions, and there's going to be defenses available. So, you know, someone who's innocent isn't going to, you know, be put in jail for a long time, you know, based on what we're doing here. And that may be well and true, but the law that we are changing today serves a much greater purpose than just increasing or decreasing the number of prosecutions that we have in this state. And so while we're focusing a lot of our discussion on prosecutions, we're also at the same time equivocating by acknowledging that we're trying to change behavior through this bill. And so we are redefining a fundamental definition, the definition of what consent is, which is what the definition of rape is. And we're trying to move society by changing the way we define the word and criminalizing conduct in this bill that until this bill is passed is not criminal and therefore cannot be prosecuted. And so I think as a committee, we need to decide one of those two options. Is the purpose of a crime and putting a crime in statute focused just on the prosecutions, or does it have other impacts as well? And are we trying to change society and behavior by, you know, coming up with a new or a better definition of the word? I think we'll find that the impact of changing this type of word and this type of crime will be felt all along the spectrum, only the end of which is prosecution and conviction. And it will impact relationships when there's no prosecution and there's no referral of charges. And some of that will be a positive impact, and some of that will be a negative impact, like some of the concerns that were raised by Representative Kirka and myself earlier. And we are not, as a committee, adequately weighing the pros and the cons. We're focusing exclusively on the pros. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Kirka.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to say that I appreciate the sponsor of the bill taking up this issue and fighting for it so hard. I appreciate the conversation, and I appreciate what the amended version is trying to do. I think it's improved. However, I do agree with Representative Eastman. There's this conflict here, and I will be objecting as well, I guess, to the bill moving forward. I know we've had a lot of meetings on it, but this is such an important issue that I don't think it's something we can get wrong even by a little bit.
Thank you. I don't have anything to add other than what I've already commented. Representative Tarr, I'm going to depart from usual practice and give you a chance. We limit committee members 3 minutes. I'll give you 3 minutes to add any closing comments you'd like before we take a vote on moving the bill.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, and to the members of the committee for all of the time that has been put in on this legislation. I think had an opportunity to cover a lot of topics that, you know, are sort of part of the bigger conversation. So, you know, left me feeling there's no shortage of issues for us to work on and things to consider. And I think, you know, what we've landed on is really a good step forward. We know that, you know, changing the way the element of force is, you know, putting it into the elements of the crime rather than being part of consent, you know, we know for sure that will be a positive step forward. To Representative Eastman's comments, you know, the behaviors are happening now. You know, what we're trying to do is more effectively define, you know, what we consider to be acceptable behavior. And I think, you know, that's what this represents, right? As a community, as a culture, as, you know, people that live together and, you know, want a community to be safe, you know, what we're doing with legislation and any public safety legislation is, you know, we're defining those standards, right? So that's what we're trying to say is that, you know, as people who live in community together, this is what we think is safe, and you know, we want to create the expectations for what we expect of each other and the way we treat each other. And so, you know, that's what I hope we will accomplish here. You know, the criminal piece of it is never the preferred outcome, because of course that means an individual may have been harmed already. But what we think can be very positive is the prevention and education opportunities that can also come out of moving this forward. And, you know, we very much look forward to that, because the end goal, I hope we all have the same end goal, is that we want to reduce the incidence of sexual violence in Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Madam Secretary, if you would call the roll, and I'd note for purposes of moving the bill. Actually, can't do that yet. Representative Drummond, can I have a motion?
You sure can, Mr. Chair. I move version 32. Let me look at this thing and make sure I'm actually moving the bill we've been talking about. L32-LS0065-R of House Bill 5 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Objection. There's no objection. So if you would call the roll, and I doubt for this purpose we're only taking the roll of those present.
Representative Eastman?
No.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Chair Klayman?
Yes.
3 yea, 1 nay.
So by a vote of 3-1, House Bill 5 moves from committee.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Kirka?
This is Representative Craig Falcon.
Representative Christ,
I want to take. It might be worth taking a quick at ease.
Brief at ease. Our second and final order of business today is actually brief at ease. Back on record. Our second and final order of business today is House Bill 325, Domestic Violence, sponsored by Representative Rasmussen. This is the third hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. Our office did not receive any amendments to House Bill 325. That brings House Bill 325 back before the committee and to final comments. And if my mental calculation is working correctly, Representative Snyder, you're first up on comments on House Bill 325.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No comments except to thank the sponsor.
Representative Drummond.
No comments, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to put it on the record. I've had concerns about having acts of harassment, which the revenge porn would be considered an act of harassment under domestic violence. I've had concerns about those types of crimes being classified as domestic violence for the sake of the word violence, because I don't want to minimize physical assault on people. However, there are already other areas that are listed by statute under domestic violence. And in a perfect world, I would love to have another separate category that that we could call it under this domestic issue because of it being so egregious. But that is a battle that I'm going to be fighting for another day because we clearly need to be able to find have another tool for people who are dealing with this type of harassment. And so I am glad to see that we can move this along, but just want to keep that in mind as we consider future crime policy when it comes to domestic engagements, that when there's physical violence involved, it takes on a different element of force that I believe deserves its own category, not to minimize these other criminal activities at all. But that was my original concern and hesitation, and believe that all of these issues are egregious in their own right. So just want to keep that in mind for the future, but understand that that's not for today. So I will be supporting this bill as it is.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Wow. So it's the second time in a day I'll be objecting to passage of the bill, and here's why. As a committee whose job is to look at this bill and address the pertinent questions, one of the pertinent questions which we haven't, which we're doing a little bit of cheating on, as referred to a moment ago, is the fact that we are choosing to address a problem by simply redefining words in a way that are not in the normal vernacular, in a way that dictionaries don't refer to them currently. I guess maybe they will in the future if other states pass laws like this. But we have set aside a category of crimes in statute for domestic violence, and we have leveraged an awful lot of other things in statute, other crimes and other sanctions and penalties, other impacts in society, based on the fact that it's domestic violence. There's assumption when someone is convicted or even charged in some cases with domestic violence that they no longer have access to firearms. And in many cases, in most cases, that is true, because there's the federal law limiting access to firearms for those who've had that kind of conviction. But that's not going to be the case here, because we've created a new crime of domestic violence, which has nothing to do with violence. In fact, this has to do with sharing a photo of someone, which is criminal conduct. We're not creating that criminal conduct. What we're doing is we're adding the label of domestic violence to it. And so what are the other things that happen when domestic violence is involved? Well, there's a requirement for an officer to arrest someone when they arrive on scene and they take that call, even if both of the parties or all the parties involved say, no, we don't want anybody arrested. That discretion is removed from the arresting officer, and they have to arrest someone. And I think that there's a reason for that, and it has to do with violence, and this is not a violent act. So why would we, attach the definition of domestic violence to a nonviolent act? And I think the takeaway is because, as the member previously alluded, it would require a lot of work to try and parse out the difference between, say, domestic violence crimes and crimes which are only rise to the level of domestic abuse, which may be worse and might necessitate and deserve and justify greater sanctions, but don't involve violence. And so the sanctions in those cases should be different. It is not to say that, violence is in every situation worse than nonviolent. I think there's plenty of nonviolent activity which can be worse. And we're not doing our work to make that distinction. So I'll be objecting to pass that.
Thank you very much. Representative Kirka, comments on House Bill 325.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I identify with both remarks from the two previous speakers. I just think this is the wrong approach. I think that revenge porn is a huge – I think it should be a lot stiffer penalty, and I agree with the intent of making it stiffer penalties, but the way the bill is drafted, the way we're – associating with violence is, I think, a big mistake. I think that kind of activity, that action should be heavily penalized, but I just think we're going about it all the wrong way. So I will be objecting to passing this out of committee as well.
You don't get a vote for passing out of committee because you're home with your kids, but I do appreciate your perspective.
Right.
Representative Christ Tompkins.
No comments.
And I would just say that Representative Vance, the comments you raise are, I think there's good questions that the, a bill like this raises. But I also think I think like sexual assault, the domestic violence setting in this state it's appalling. And I think we have to try to find ways we can do more. This doesn't change any crimes. It just means what becomes subject to the process of the domestic violence restraining orders. And you know, one of the statistics that we hear most frequently is that the number of folks who get a domestic violence restraining order that within 30 days are back with the person that they had the order on. And many times they actually figure it out and patch up the relationships. But sadly, many more times there are more DV petitions and more return to the relationship. And I've heard from people from all over the spectrum saying, we've been doing the same thing for years and the statistics haven't gotten better. And so I support this bill, but I also think we should not look at this as solving the problem. I think it's a resource question and who are in the communities helping people learn how to behave better. Because we can arrest all the people we want, but if we don't start changing behavior, we're not going to see changes. So I share your concerns, but I also also am willing to move this bill forward. We're going to take a very brief at ease. Back on record, Representative, I apologize, I did not recognize Representative Rasmussen joined us online at 11:49 a.m. And so Representative Rasmussen, Representative Vance actually asked you to, I'm going to give you 3 minutes like I gave Rep. Parr in the last one, and Representative Vance specifically wants you to talk about the intent of the bill in your closing comments. But again, this is a little outside the usual procedure in this committee, but it must be because it's happening before noon. I'm being lenient with both bill sponsors. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill heard again. In response to Representative Vance through the chair, and for the record, this is Representative Rasmussen representing District 22 in Anchorage. My intent behind this is, just as the chair stated, I think that with the relevancy of electronic images and revenge porn, we need another means for Alaskans experiencing domestic violence through this means to be able to get a restraining order. So I'm hoping we can continue the conversation. I understand the concerns with incarceration or mandatory arrest for the revenge porn, and I hope that our law enforcement will use their best discretion and make sure that these cases are handled seriously, but not to overextend resources where there's physical violence involved. And again, appreciate the committee's consideration.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Representative Drummond, can I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move version 32-LS1526/A of House Bill 325 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection, the bill moves from committee. Representative Eastman, do you actually want to object?
I just want to object.
So you want the vote?
Yes.
Okay, because I had heard no objection, and then when I said there were no objections, then you objected. So, all right, I'm going to consider the late objection as timely. And Madam Secretary, if you would please call the roll of those present.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Vance?
Yes.
Representative Eastman?
No.
Chair Klayman?
Yes.
Three yay, one nay.
So by a vote of 3-1, House Bill 325 moves from committee. We will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is Monday, May 9th at 1 p.m. We will stand adjourned. The time is 11:58 a.m.